listen to two married lesbians discuss an LGBTQ plus book each month that highlights the queer human condition as they use connection and humor to relate the issues to us as a queer community. She's Anna.
And she's Miranda.
I am. And we're two married lesbians.
We are.
And we're all queer here. And we're back again.
Yes.
We didn't go away.
Consistently.
Yay.
Consistently we're back. This is the second episode that we owe you guys.
It's an IOU episode.
IOU episode. Looking forward to jumping into this book. But first we have to give a free little library update.
That's right. There has been quite the odyssey of the free little library adventure.
Right.
From the rescue. Mm-hmm. To the rehabilitation, to the relocation. We had a groundbreaking, if you will, where you and I took turns digging a very, very deep, narrow hole in the ground.
It was never fun. I can never bury a body.
It would take too long. It's too much work.
Unless we partner up with some beefy person and be like, can you dig a hole?
I say just don't murder anybody.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, probably, if I happen upon...
Why wouldn't you report it?
Yeah, fair. But if it was like, you know, one of those, like, well, we had to get rid of it. It's just, you know.
Okay, if we had a farm.
Okay.
And an animal passed away.
Mm.
That's the only.
I would just hire someone to
that's the only situation
hole.
I'm comfortable with you needing to bury a body.
I would just hire someone to bury a hole, like a local kid or something. Uh-huh. Kids, because it's a lot of work.
So you're now seeking help from minors to bury bodies.
Well, you said animals.
Okay.
Let's just, we don't have a farm. We don't have a need to bury animals. We have buried a few hamsters
over the past few years. Sadly. Yeah.
That's nowhere near as deep of a hole.
Oh, yeah. Those holes are no big deal. Yeah.
So anyway, so Kenan came home many months ago with his hands
full. Arms full of books.
Yeah, that he'd taken out. And it had just rained. So some of them were wet. And if you know
He was distraught.
Yeah. But if you know anything about wet books, you can't save them. They mildew and then it spreads. So I was like, we can't save all these. We have to get rid of these. So separate the books, dry and wet, you know, separate them. And then we went and saw, because it was a house that was up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then the new buyers came in and they just dug it out.
Dug it out and tossed it on the side of the road.
So we rescued it, put it in our car. And then you had to kind of redo the
post. I had to get a whole new base and post because it was kind of rotted. Put a whole new coat of paint on it to weatherproof it.
It looks really nice. We'll post it on Instagram. We'll share that.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, we'll share that. But and then I was curating books from...
We had like two or three boxes of books.
Yeah, because I went to like a couple library sales to curate books. We wanted, you know, queer books and books that had been banned and... books with people of color and all of the above.
Adult kids.
Yeah. And then we had to write a little blurb about our free little library. And I said like tame adult. So like if a kid were to pick up the book, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
No 50 Shades of Grey. No 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, because that's technically classified as erotica. So, but no like steamy beach reads, you know?
Okay.
But I think I put on there, but if you email us, I'm more than willing to give you a recommendation. I just, you know, didn't want a little kid coming home and grabbing a picture book and saying, Mommy, I got you this.
And you're like, Oh, no.
Mommy needs to read this in private. we've had lots of people stop and our mail person stopped.
I loved it when, because we have like a video doorbell just because the world. Mm-hmm. And I saw, my Amazon package is here. And I went out to pick it up and I see the Amazon driver and she's just looking in the free little library. And she was like, y'all have good stuff. And I was like, oh, thanks. Enjoy.
We know we do. Yeah. And I was out there out front the other morning just putzing around with, you know, weeds. And a neighbor drove by and stopped. And I thought, what's going on? And we hadn't mowed in a while. So I kind of wondered if she was going to be like, y'all need to mow. Which wouldn't shock me at all.
I feel like with life, there's better things to do than mow.
It's just also hot as hell out. So it's been hard to get my butt up and mow. So anyway, she rolled her window down and was hollering and was like, is this your free little library? And I said, oh yeah, I put books. Did you have a recommendation? She was like, no, we just love it so much. And so I was like, oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, come back and visit us. So we've had people give us books. A couple, mm-hmm. one of them was Ban This Book, which is about censorship.
Oh, that was exciting.
Yeah, by Alan Gratz. So that was fantastic. So it's nice to see what's kind of going, you know. Yeah, so library book sales, always get on your list of your local library to see. Usually it's a fall sale and a spring sale. So, but yeah, we still have like at least a box and a half of books that I've been kind of saving to put out there.
Like fill in the gaps.
Yeah, it's really fun. And a fun project.
Yeah, I'm glad we could rescue it. It would have been a shame for it to just...
Yeah, because you were going to build one anyway. So we were in the process anyway. But then we were like, hey, reuse, recycle, repurpose.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, and then when we had reached out to that organization, they looked up the number because it's a registration mm-hmm. number. And they were like, oh, actually, this was a partnership with the...
Mesquite Education Foundation.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It was
right by the school.
Yeah, we're on the corner from the school. So it's a little further away. It's really only like a quarter mile.
Not much we could do about that.
But we do have a lot of traffic though.
We do.
We're high traffic, so.
So that was nice.
A benefit too.
Yeah. I think that's all for like updates since last time.
Yeah, sounds good. No more dogs acquired.
Yeah. We're still sitting at
five.
The same number of undisclosed dogs.
Oh,
what are
right.
you saying numbers for?
Fair. There could always be another one that just hops in.
Who knows?
It's our weak spot.
Well, yeah.
Books
They're
and
so
dogs.
Cute.
Yeah.
And unlike books, the dogs don't shelve well.
They don't, no.
I've tried. So, what's today's book?
Today's book is If I Was Your Girl by Meredith Russo. Publishers Weekly suggests this title for ages 13 and up, and School Library Journal suggests it for grades 9 and up. It is our belief that only parents have the final say about what reading material is best for their children. Author Meredith Russo is a transgender woman. Her debut young adult novel is If I Was Your Girl. Came out in 2016. Can you believe that?
Goodness.
And I've got fun facts.
Sneaks up on you.
Yeah,
okay.
And was... the first widely distributed young adult book about transgender teens written by a transgender woman.
That's, I mean, that's huge. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and that just goes to show how much more powerful stories are when they're written from a lived experience. And not to like jump ahead, but I really loved Meredith's author's note at the end.
Yes.
I imagine, because I listened to the audiobook twice now, but I listened to the audiobook, and I imagine that's her voice at the end. Like, she's actually telling you, because it's a different voice than you hear for the narrator. And I just really loved what she had to say about everything that, you know, that this was truly... She speaks to like that trans experience or queer experience, but trans experience specifically isn't a monolith. And that like if you meet or hear about or watch a movie, read a book, whatever, of one trans person's experience, whether that's fictional or nonfiction, that doesn't translate to every trans person. Everyone has these different complex experiences. But I also really loved that she was like, you know, this isn't really my life, but I wanted to write a story about a trans girl that kind of lowered any barriers for people that are cisgendered so that it feels as approachable as possible, so that people can better understand and empathize how everybody's just a person and like...
We're all human.
That's the secret, I feel like, to helping people that, you know, if you fast forward to now, sorry, Meredith Russo of 2016, it's gotten worse. Better in some ways, but worse in so many others.
I just think it means we need another book by her, because her second book, Birthday,
yeah,
came out in 2019, so she's
we're let's go for a while. Let's Come go on. We want another one of your books.
But, anyway, so this book is inspired by her life's events, It won the Stonewall Book Award for Young Adult for the Young Adult category in 2017, and the Walter Dean Myers Award for Outstanding Children's Literature that same year, and it had a lot of starred reviews. So, I mean, this was a book, I can't remember who recommended it, but it was recommended to me, and I just couldn't put it down. I mean,
it's so good.
It's like a new classic. It's like the classic queer canon. Like, if mm-hmm. I had to give 20, 30 books as, like, you know, to like a new queer beat of like, here's your reading material. This mm-hmm. would be one I include.
Yeah. Well, I know, like, when we were first dating, I was still a queer bee.
Yeah.
I was still freshly out. And I remember just feeling so hungry for queer media. And even since I came out, which I haven't been out tons of time. I mean, like, what was it? Five, six years? Yeah. There's still been even more queer content. Like, it's almost like this exponential growth as far as new content on top of, you know, the wealth of what was available at the time. But I was just like, tell me about all the movies. Tell me about all the books. Tell me about all the artists that I need to be following. So I think it's a beautiful jumping off point, but I also think it should be a jumping off point that people need to seek out more trans stories. Because the deeper that we understand each other, the better that we can be allies for each other, the better that we can fight. I know we talked about this a little bit last time about, I think we did, that I know for me personally, it feels really daunting and difficult to stand up to someone who says homophobic things because that affects me directly. But when I hear somebody that seems to be a genuine human that's like, you know, dealing with some ignorance, but seems open to understanding things better, I will fight for my trans family. But until very recently, I didn't feel like I could fight well enough to make a difference. Because the last thing I wanted to do as someone who is cisgendered is say the wrong thing and spread misinformation, or say the wrong thing and it accidentally be harmful. And I mean, I want to go back in time and give Miranda a little grace and say, listen, you don't have to be perfect, but look for resources and share them. If you don't feel like I can tell you this and this and this, and I have an argument for everything that you might think is, you know, confusing to you, then just pull up some websites that you know are good resources and say, check this out. Let me text this to you. Let me share this with you. Or let's read this right now.
I think for a long time, transgender rights have been put on the back burner. Or not even put on the back burner. Like, they're in the fridge waiting their turn to be like heated up as a casserole for Thanksgiving.
And that's not fair.
Because I remember, like, just learning about city history in Dallas, and they mm-hmm. didn't include, so like for the city's non-discrimination ordinance and like housing, jobs and like programming or something,
mm-hmm.
They didn't include gender identity mm-hmm. because they didn't think it would pass. And then like 20 years later, now they're including gender identity and expression, and that passed. And they're going back to all these other ones that they did
mm-hmm.
over a decade ago to include this. And it's like, if we both don't get it, the gay and the trans communities, then we should get it. And their argument was, we got to start somewhere. Okay, so then it's over like, but 10 then years
you
need, later?
Yeah, you can't wait that long. I mean, this goes, like, if you...
Either we're a family or we're not.
Yeah, you have to hold the door open. You have to hold the door open. So if you go and you say, like, I know Stonewall wasn't the beginning of queer civil rights, but it was this catalytic moment that really did kind of force it in a bigger direction, right? But
started by trans women of color.
Absolutely. Because
But when did you learn about that?
Well, not in school.
Well,
certainly
we
didn't.
We talked about that. I hadn't, yeah, but I hadn't realized how big transgender women had been monumental in that fight.
You already have the fact that queer education, queer history isn't talked about in school. It isn't talked about as publicly in news sources and things like that. We've made some big movements, you know, in the last several years, but the erasure of the sheer power and force of trans women of color, and just trans folks, because, like, much like lesbians, trans men kind of don't get as big of a spotlight, if you will. Like, all of our trans family are so powerful and amazing and wonderful, and it is so frustrating to see that in many ways our queer family hasn't held the door open for them, hasn't put their needs up at the forefront of everyone else's needs. Because, like you said, you know, oh, it'll be too hard to get it passed. That was the same line that was said when you know, that march was first happening, and you had all these gay men that were like, listen, we really need to work on marriage first. And it's like,
we need to keep our jobs.
We need to work on everybody.
So you can afford an engagement ring to get married.
I mean, some people don't even want to get married.
That was very much the mindset of the 90s was, mm-hmm. kind of, I hate to say it, but like gays only.
Mm-hmm. But the door didn't get held open.
Donuts Don't Tell, mm-hmm. was about sexuality. Mm-hmm. And then we still were fighting in the 2010s for trans troops, you mm-hmm. know. Then you had Boy Scouts that let in gay, mm-hmm. gay scouts, gay scout leaders, and then trans scouts. So, like, when is it going to be their turn? Like, when is it, like, trans rights are now?
Yes.
Like, that has been my frustration for a long time, because whether I was in a meeting or, you know,
I want that as a shirt.
Trans rights.
I would wear that shirt all the time.
It's just frustrating because you see, you know, people say, like, the LGBTQ plus community, or they add more letters, which is fine.
The more under the umbrella, the better.
No, I know. I jumble up when I say too many letters. So I say LGBTQ plus, because the plus is, my plus is very inclusive.
Yes.
Or you say queer community. That includes transgender people.
Yes.
Period. End of story.
Yes.
So anyway, I just love what Meredith Russo has done.
We're going to take a step off of the soapbox.
I'm sure there's...
But we're ready to get back on it.
Yes.
At a moment's notice.
But I think there's a lot more examples.
It's travel size.
We could come up with. But it disheartens me when I think of there's a big segment of our community that
they're still suffering, and they're in very, very, very real danger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, suicide rates are higher.
Suicide rates are higher
for trans people and for. So pretty much in every segment, in every facet of life that you look at, it just seems like the trans rights are behind the times.
Yeah.
Especially when it's hard not to compare them to gay rights.
Yeah, we've got to stand by our entire family and make sure those are put at the forefront. You know, whether it's supporting people who are trying to get their birth certificate to reflect the correct gender, whether it's, you know, doing what we can to support legislation or fights against legislation, depending on the state. And it's hard, but like even if we just drill down, because like obviously we aren't necessarily, you know, the best ones to speak on this, but we're the two people sitting in this den, so we're gonna talk to each other. But if you are also feeling like, hey, I wish I could be more help to my trans family, but I feel overwhelmed and lost right now. If you have trans friends, just reach out to them and be like, hey, I'd love to hang out and chat.
I'd love to earn the title of ally.
Yeah. And just, you know, we can't put the onus on the person whose rights are being most eroded to be the one to reach out to us. Like, we have to reach out and say, hey, I know stuff's been really rough. If you ever want to talk about it, I'm here. I'd love to listen.
I know that we, you know, we talk in our intro about being two married lesbians, and we are still married. We're not breaking up.
No, that we better not. And if this is how I find out, Anna, I'm furious.
No. the other life update that I didn't share was, didn't share earlier, was I came out as non-binary to Miranda during Pride Month.
I'm making an E face.
And to my sister. And I'm just kind of taking it step by step. I feel better being, you know, living in my truth.
I'm not so proud
not
of you.
Not yet sure how I will maneuver the work situation. My pronouns are she, they. It's a little scary. But at the same time, you know, non-binary often falls under the trans pride.
Mm-hmm. Umbrella.
And so, well, and pride. I kind of have always had a special place in my heart for the transgender community, especially when I covered issues for a queer newspaper. And I guess I just didn't really want to admit it because it's really scary. And I still consider myself a lesbian because in the binary world where we're forced to pick one, you know, I definitely pick female because I want that to count for my political views and all of the post-polling, you know, where I fall. And
So you're politically female.
Politically female.
But you are a non-binary person.
I am a non-binary person, yes. So.
Well, I'm really proud of you.
Thank
that you.
You
felt safe enough.
But that does not mean that I am non-binary-ing like another non-binary person, you know? So, you know, talking to people about not coming out at work, I mean, that's...
You can't put it back in.
You can't put it back in, and then you
and
have all those conversations.
You gotta be safe.
I need to get my, like, kind of like my elevator pitch down, you know?
Oh, okay.
That I think that I have to kind of get that down
your
before
quick I... come out?
Yes. And I also, I already know that in the past, me being openly gay has turned off some people from working with me because mm-hmm. they were not...
they were a little homophobic.
Supportive. Yeah, well, they weren't supportive of my quote-unquote lifestyle. So,
That's so gross when those words are
it
used.
It is gross, I know. But anyway, so, I'm working
through
it. Well,
I love you.
Thank
and
you.
And I'm so proud of you, because I know literally last time we talked about this book, you weren't sure if you were ready to come out to the podcast.
That's true.
And I'm just really proud of you. I'm just so
it's like my second coming out and I'm in my 30s. It's terrifying.
It
but
happens.
you weren't surprised. You were like, no, you want to talk a little to that?
Oh, sure. I was like, I literally texted your sister this too, after you came out to her, of course. But I was like, yeah, I kind of knew, but it's not my place to tell you who you are. It's my place to make you feel safe and give you the space you need to figure out your journey. Nobody comes out on a schedule. Like, you don't...
Probably, like, 5 o'clock tonight.
Yes, if you're not out by 23, then you're behind. Like, when you're othered, like, there's no excuse to engage in gatekeeping. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people come out when they're ready. People come out when they feel safe. People come out when, you know, it feels like there's more reasons to be out than in.
I mean, my last ex was very anti-trans, and we butted heads about that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
She was just pretty much like, you are what you are. And I was like, that's not how it works. And so that was trying. And then, you know, with you, you were so wonderful. I feel like I can be myself regardless. But also, we're married. We're almost hitting the three-year mark.
And, we measure our marriage in miles.
And, yes, and life is a 5K.
Oh,
we're
I was going to ask when we changed the tires.
Oh,
but you're,
nice.
You're running. I'm
yeah,
in
there
a
you
car.
Go. But, I mean, I just kind of knew you would accept me, so.
Always. As I told you in the past, I am antisexual, so.
Yes.
So, well, that's awesome. And I'm really glad you felt safe enough to share that with everybody.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back. And we're back.
Do you want to kick us off about the book?
Okay.
This is an emotional read. I cry every time I read this. And
Sainsies.
I don't cry a lot. You can attest to
this.
I'm like, you know, I'm like watching the sad movie. I'm like, okay. And then I look over at you and you're like bawling with like tissues, you know, crumbling in your hands.
No, I don't.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes bad.
Sometimes. Well, I wouldn't say it's bad. I just feel very deeply.
Right.
And sometimes that happens in a commercial. Mm-hmm. So I've now read this book twice because of our hiatus. I finished it this morning and I texted you. I was like, so I just finished the book. I'm crying again. Mm-hmm. And you texted back. Yeah, I cry every time.
But it's like a cathartic cry. Like, mm-hmm. it's not like it's a sad so cry. It's just like a, I'm literally there with you.
Yes.
In that moment. We'll talk about the ending, but like.
Yeah, there's like happy cries in it. There's angry cries. There's sad cries. There's a lot of cries. But I loved, so like one of, like I, there were a bunch of different lines where I felt the need, because like, for my job, a lot of times I'm driving, and so I'm like listening while I'm driving. And so this book, more than I think maybe any other, she would just have like these lines where I was like, I have to pull over.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I can mm-hmm. make a note of that line.
It's almost like life tidbits. Like you just want to like...
You're like, please give me that kernel.
Yeah, keep I'm it
gonna,
and share it later.
I'm going to put it on the wall of my heart. And just use it for a rainy day or to help somebody when they need to hear it. But one of the first lines that was like that for me was, something has to change because I changed. And like, I thought that was really beautiful. And I mean, it's not like I changed and now I'm a girl. She was always a girl. It was like she got to that point in her life that she was like, I can't continue with the path that I'm on. I can't continue with where I live and the people that are around me and the hate that I'm facing. Like, something had to change because I changed. I deserve better. I just, throughout this entire book, I loved that growth that you saw in Amanda, where she really learned to not only like love herself, but to understand that she deserved to be loved. She deserved all the kindness and the attention and everything that she was given. And I know I'm going to talk about like the author's note multiple times throughout this, but like I loved too in that author's note where Meredith was like, her experience. And I think in the book, I think maybe it was Virginia that was like, yeah, and you won the lottery, the genetic lottery for passing.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a hard topic to talk about.
Yeah. And then, but in the author's note, Meredith is like, you're just as valid, mm-hmm. whether you pass, whether you don't, whether you care about that, whether you don't, whether you have surgery, whether you don't, or whether you do have hormone therapy, whether you don't, like all of this. The entire trans experience, however you, the individual, experience your trans identity, all of it is valid. And even if you don't look like a specific Western beauty standard or a specific binary ideal, you're valid, you're attractive, you're cute, you're beautiful, you're handsome, you're good looking, whatever feels good to you is that compliment of you looking and feeling yourself and being you, that is trans joy. And that is worthy and valid. And
there's another t-shirt, trans joy.
Trans joy. I know. I love trans joy.
I think the passing thing is one of the most offensive that people can say.
I think... So, I would love to know the thing I'm about to say is wrong. I would love to know that because, again, can't speak from a trans experience. But to me, it seems like that is a term used within the community that in a way has become a gatekeeping word.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I know...
As a way to highlight the people who are less than.
Yeah. And it's like, don't punch down. We need everybody up together to fight. If we're busy pushing people down, we're not all fighting at our strongest. It's just like, I have tried really hard to work on... when I first came out, I'd be like, man, I feel super gay today. And I would use it as Like, when I do something that was masculine presenting activity, I'd be like, man, I feel so gay. Like, look, I'm working on this car. And I was like, Miranda, think about that. Because you working on a car, that isn't intrinsically gay. Straight women can work on cars. And femme gay women, if they don't want to work on a car, or a butch gay woman who doesn't want to work on a car, are they any less gay? No. Is a straight woman gay because she works on car? No. So it's like, for me, I've been trying to look at the way that I use words and make sure that I'm not inadvertently causing harm or gatekeeping. I don't know. Do you think that whole passing thing is kind of falls within that? Or, I mean, I don't know.
I think it does, you know.
Or it could.
I've done stories on, again, back in the day, and this was back in 2012 to 2014 when I was a queer journalist, about teenagers transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the trans doctors was talking about, the sooner we can get them to transition, the more they are to pass. And I was like, whoa, this is a lot. And I was like, you know, talk to me about that. Because, you know, if your parents aren't on board with you at, you know, 10, 11, and 12 getting into hormone blockers, you're waiting until you're 18. And then maybe you don't have insurance mm-hmm. if you're in college, or the insurance is too expensive. Mm-hmm. So now we're looking at 22.
Or your insurance doesn't cover it.
Yeah. And now we're looking at 22 or 24. And it's like, you do what you want when you can. Mm-hmm. And that journey looks different.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't
still
have,
you're still trans the entire time.
Yeah, you're still trans the entire time. You pick the name, you pick your pronouns, and you pick it and you stick with it. And not stick with it, but like,
yeah,
with your identity.
Yeah.
And if people say, you should have transitioned sooner, that's none of their damn business.
Well, and also, yeah, okay, so you were stepping in to pay for everything? You know, or maybe you have the money, you have the resources, but it doesn't feel right to you yet.
Or it's a little scary. You know, that doesn't feel right. It's a little scary. You know, I had a student a while ago who, dad was supportive, mom wasn't, they were divorced, and was like, I can't wait to 18. I can't wait to go on T. I can't wait till I'm 18. And I was like, you know, I'm going to encourage you to talk to your mom if this is how you feel. And you're like, literally, they're about to go into high school. They had 4 years mm-hmm. to wait. That's a long time. I said, I would encourage you to bring your dad in and have this conversation when you feel comfortable. Because if that's where you're headed and you really know that's what you want, you know, try to get it sooner, you know. But I don't know how that ended up. But it's, you know, it's hard because, like, you know, and like in Texas, if you get a name change under 18, I think both parents have to sign off on it. So it's just tough, you know, when you've got to, especially when you're under parental care, you know, and there's disagreement. That's just really tough.
Yeah.
But whether you transition with hormones or whether you don't, you're still trans. You're still part of that community, and no one should make you feel less than. So I don't think passing is meant to, it's almost like when I first heard it, it was like, it was used as a compliment,
mm-hmm.
but, and I think that's what Virginia means. She's like, you're a hot piece, you know,
yeah.
Look at you, girl. But, it's also, I think it can be perceived as a very derogatory term.
Yeah. That brings up the very universally true thing of, if you're talking to somebody and you don't know the lived experience, you know, make sure that you're politely asking appropriate questions. So like, hey, my pronouns are she, her, what are yours? That's a great place to start.
It really
because
is.
Because you take the first emotional labor step of saying, listen, pronouns are important to me. Here are mine. I would love to know yours. And then you go from there. And I mean, I think it's one of those things like if we listen to each other a little bit more, I think we can get a lot further. I did find it interesting in this book versus other trans books that I've read that Amanda's character actually gets deadnamed repeatedly as part of the narrative.
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily, oh, somebody found out, like in Felix Ever After. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't like that where, like, the bully was like, ah, oh, I have outed you, and, like, that horrific.
There's a picture of your previous life.
Yes, yeah. But this one was, like, from a narrative angle, the author intentionally was like, here, we're actually gonna bounce back and forth between where, you know, Amanda was before she came out, and then where Amanda is now.
And then the attack that led her to live with her dad.
Yeah. And I thought, like, speaking of Amanda's mom and her dad, I really enjoyed getting to kind of see the differences in the relationships that she had with her mother and her father. And, like, you have this mother that is given everything financially and emotionally, and, like, all of I mean, anything and everything she had, she gave to her daughter to pay for surgery, which honestly probably wouldn't have been possible at that age, at that time. Like, realistically, that's a pretty out there thing.
Well, I think it just goes to show how...
That age. Well, that's a lot of privilege.
That's a lot of privilege, and I think it goes to show how supportive some parents can be.
Yeah, so, like...
You know, I think at one point she says there was either, I was either going to lose my son or gain a daughter.
Oh, no, I was going to lose Andrew either way. Andrew was going to die either way.
Okay.
So I could either lose him entirely and have no one, or I could gain a daughter.
Yeah. I just thought that was, I mean, tears. I mean.
I, like, as a parent, I don't know. I have a difficult relationship with it because I have a difficult relationship with my mother. But, like, I understand where she was coming from, and I understand that there is a lot of emotional labor for any parent of a trans kid or a queer kid or what have you. That as a parent, you want your kid's life to be easy, and you know that the world is full of terrible people in general, and that there are specifically people that could potentially attack and hurt or kill your kid. And that's really scary.
You bring up the surgery, and one of the things that was really hard to read about was when Parker jumps on her.
Oh my gosh.
And starts to let's see if you're a real woman or not. And Chloe stops her.
I was furious.
But, like,
I loved Chloe when she like comes out with a shotgun.
Yeah, that's priceless.
Or was it a rifle? It's
very southern. Let me get my gun.
This was a very southern story.
What drives me nuts is this fascination of, like, how transitioned someone is. You know, we talk about the passing. Mm-hmm. The only person or the only people who have a right to know
anything
about your genitals.
Or your journey.
Right. Or your journey. Or the people who interact with them. So your doctor and the people you're being intimate with. Period. End of story.
Well,
that's my opinion.
I mean, I would hope that eventually you would feel safe enough with a partner.
I just said people you're intimate with.
But no, but I'm saying, like, not necessarily all of them deserve or have a right to know that.
If you're being intimate, wink, wink.
No, but I'm saying, like, if you're having casual sex, you don't necessarily need to tell them.
That's true.
Now, if you feel safe and you're in a relationship, well, you and I are a little more monogamy-y.
Yeah.
If I want to marry you, if I married you, I want to tell you all the things about me, and vice versa.
But Amanda did not have to tell Grant anything about anything.
I agree.
I mean, when she does, she puts it in a letter. I just love that's kind of like old school.
Mm-hmm.
She puts it in a letter because that's kind of how, you know, some people process.
Yeah.
And, well, then he burns it.
Well, but I just loved him so much. I know. He was a delight.
He's one of the good ones.
And I love, too, like...
He's like, I already know it, or at this point it doesn't matter, or whatever he says.
Yeah. Well, but the signaling, too, like when they're at the party and Parker was like... giving him a hard time because I guess he had a friend, I'm blanking on his name, but it was like Tommy or something, mm-hmm. that was gay. And he was like throwing, you know,
mad
homophobic
shade.
Slurs at him. And I I love that he stood, you know, he stood by his friend and he didn't let homophobia influence him. Because I, you know, in high school, it's hard to stand by your convictions.
A little bit.
It's a difficult time. And the fact that he had enough character that he was like, this is my friend. He's awesome. And you suck. I had really complicated emotions and reactions to, not to skip towards the end, but when everything fell apart at the big, what was it, the homecoming dance. Cause like,
oh yeah, you liked the like proposal.
I love the whole Star Wars angle, and there was like this promposal where Amanda's like, I don't know if Grant's gonna ask, I don't know what the deal is. And then his friends come in with like little stormtrooper outfits on, and they basically like cheesily act out the Han Solo carbonite frozen, you know.
Yeah, I love scene. You. I know.
I like you. Because like they you, weren't yeah. ready no, and I'm yet. I'm
saying that's what the thing but is. Yeah, yeah, in the scene. They're very much in like still.
Yeah. And I thought that was really, really cool. But that also brings up when she went to the party with Grant, and it was a Halloween party. And so she like gave him this like Boba Fett outfit, and she was dressed up.
Oh, yeah, that was
as the the bounty hunter outfit. And so they go to the party, and she was like talking about something about how difficult it is to be a girl, and he's like, well, it can't be that difficult. And she's like, it is a lot more difficult than you think. There's mm-hmm. like all these like rules. And he's like, okay, well, you called me out, let's switch clothes. And they switched outfits, and he's like walking around dressed up as her, and she's, you know, walking around dressed up as him, and like the guys are saying these horrendous things to her, thinking she's Grant, and she's like, oh,
this guys is terrible.
Are awful. And oh. then he's getting flirted with, and he's like, yeah, it was weird. I mean, it felt good to get a compliment, but
not in that way.
That felt weird.
I found it in my notes where she about the letter. He says he never needed to know, and that he'll never regret being with her. He says, I'll never regret being with you.
Well, and I love that part, but then like when everything falls apart at the homecoming dance, and I get that that would be a really big deal with the way the spectacle happened, where B, who you think is somebody that is
your ally,
but then you come to find out she had a crush on Amanda, and then after Amanda and Chloe broke up, B and Chloe broke up, and then Amanda gets warned by Chloe, hey, B has a crush on you, and then I guess and she's like drunk or something.
Well, she knows that Grant doesn't know, so she's like,
Have you told
him? I know all this about you. You haven't told him. Why can't I be with you instead? Yeah. That kind of mentality.
And then like surprise kissed her, which was not cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think, like, if I was in the friend group, if I got added, Anna's already in this story, but if Miranda got added to the friend group, I don't know that I could forgive B.
Oh, I couldn't forgive B. Hell
I don't
no.
know that I could. Like, even, oh, we are at the 10-year high school reunion. I'm like, I don't.
I'm like, don't come near do me. That. No, I'm throwing my popcorn at you. No.
I oh, you have popcorn. That.
What's a 10-year reunion? There's got to be
there
snacks.
There was not popcorn at my reunion.
Yeah, well, that's because it's lame. Okay. but yeah, that... I just think... What killed me, too, and it's just like, you're the dagger, but it's true. It's very realistic. Grant says he wished she was a real girl.
Oh.
And she says... She goes... She's like, no.
Yeah.
She goes, I've always been a girl.
Yes.
I've so always been a girl. Yeah, I just was like
you tell him, Amanda.
Yeah, I was cheering for her.
Like he can just
because that's you know because he's done so well until something. You know, yes. And so I was like, I mean, I was like swearing.
Yeah, swearing at the car. I will say so. Okay, so you know where, her friends, the girls, save her from Parker,
mm-hmm.
And, well, yeah, Chloe had the gun, but the girls were also there. And they get her back to her dad, and her dad is furious, as he should be. And he assumes that it was Grant who attacked her, not Parker.
Right.
Which I'm like...
Because they're so close. I mean...
Yet again, in this world, if people just talked...
A little bit more,
we could have avoided it. But her father drives over to Grant's house, trailer, and punches him. And then you get this tableau of Grant's mother coming out, and she's hurling a homophobic slur and misgendering Amanda. I mean, just hateful stuff. A, should her father have punched the minor? No. Now, if he had punched Parker, I would have been fine.
Totally.
It's a complicated emotion. But, like, I get it. I can't say I would have done anything differently except ensure that the correct person was the one I was attacking. But, like...
Always make sure who you attack is the right one.
Oh, sure. Well, I don't know if that's advice we should give. You can't. No. But anyway, Grant's mother is, like, saying this hateful stuff, and you're like... In my mind, I was like, okay, so I know Grant is a kid. How much of his environment and his mother is affecting, plus his horrific peer, how much of that is affecting the way he's talking and how he's approaching this versus is that what he truly thinks? Because, like, it takes a lot of work to kind of undo what you're taught if you are raised with, you know, racist or homophobic or xenophobic or, you know, you name it, viewpoints. So, like, what he said is awful, and he needed to be told, no, that's not okay. But it did make me feel really good that he was doing the work of being like, yeah, I'm wrong. I want to try. I want to learn. I want to do better. So, I think Grant is a really good example of when you draw your hard boundaries and you say, this is not acceptable, but you give people enough grace if they're showing that they can try and they can be compassionate and they want to learn. If you feel like it, you can give them, you know, the gift of education and give them some space. They can surprise you. Because I do
I think Parker's a lost cause.
Parker's a lost cause. He's trying to rape her.
Right.
That's never okay. That's not excusable. That's different than, oh, I was raised that homophobia is fine.
Well, I think once, you know, your thoughts become your words become your actions. Once you start saying hateful things toward a certain group of people, you then think it's okay to go and harm those people.
I mean, I agree. That's the slippery slope. But, like, there's a part of me that has to believe, in the world that we live in right now, I have to believe that if you can connect with a human and they can see your humanity as a queer person, as a trans person, as a black person, as a, you know, Native American person, as a, like, whoever you are, that someone might have a view that somehow you are less than. I have to believe people are capable of change. And then if they can see a human in front of them, not a scapegoat, not a scary monster, that they can be better. I just have to believe
that. Maybe not at Parker's age, if he's already jumping to attacking people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, full stop, be safe, run away.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I wouldn't stop and educate at that point.
No.
I mean, I just think that, I mean, I grew up with so many Parkers, like, you know, it's in the South. So, yeah. Like, for me, that was like, okay, yeah, I believe that. I
stay away from that one.
Stay away from that one. Oh, and there's another one. You know, just like whack-a-mole. Just avoid them all.
I definitely fully agree. Not everybody's educatable all the time. But, like, my hope is when Parker gets to a moment in his life that he has enough of a catalyst to change, that maybe somebody can help him see a better path and he can do a better job. I mean, I'm not saying it's the onus is on the good people out there, but
I don't know. It feels like it sometimes.
It does feel like it sometimes.
It's our job to teach people versus like their job to inquire and ask the right questions.
Well, because obviously if they were already doing that, they wouldn't be raping trans women.
Well, even when Amanda comes out to be, she tells her, don't ask about genitals, don't ask about surgery, and don't ask me what my name used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she had to educate her so that she wouldn't get awkward questions.
She had to have boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's important. Yeah, that that's popped up in school a lot because, you know, if they get a sub, they say your name, and then you dead
name.
They
say whatever's on the list.
Whatever's on the list, yeah. Mm-hmm. So kids will be like, oh, that's your name. And it's like, wait, what? What did I do? I've started asking last names.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's safe. And also mm-hmm. when, you know, you're doing checkout of Chromebooks, it's also easier to spell. Because there's a million ways to spell Ashley now. So, but, you know, yeah. Jackson or Moore is a lot easier to type in. And then sometimes I do have to ask the first name. But most of the queer kids I know. If there's a bunch of names, I'll just turn my computer and say,
Can you
point to the right one? Yeah, because, like, you know, it's devastating for a kid. So a kid came up very masculine presenting, and I was, you know, just trying to get everybody through as quickly as possible to check out their Chromebooks. And I said, you know, what's your first name? And I'll use a fake name, but it was a very feminine name, like Ashley. Like, it was very much...
With a Q.
Yeah, very much, you know... A female name, and very deep voice, Ashley. And I was like, oh my God. And I felt so awful. And so, you know, I get his Chromebook, and I said, you know, next time just tell me you want to tell me your last name first. And I'm really sorry. And he's like, I appreciate that. Thanks. But like, I was like dead inside, you know, like here, you've got this little, you know, queer librarian who's not even thinking, you know,
because... But you're learning and growing.
So now, yeah, now I do last names.
Trying to do better.
And I suggest that to coworkers, too, because it's usually easier to pronounce last names. And if there's two Jacksons, I'll just say, like, Jackson A or Jackson, you know, C or whoever it is.
Or one of you has an X in your name.
Are both last name Jacksons here? There we go. So when you cover classes. And I, you know, when I'm in a class and I see a trans student, you can just tell they appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, being seen is really important. You can't value somebody if you don't see them for who they are. You know?
I agree.
So, I wanted to say, like, I've probably mentioned this in the past, but I always love it in a book where you have a lot of consent. Let's talk about, like, Grant asked to kiss her. He's like, I really want to kiss you now. And I loved how he never, like, tried to guilt her or pressure her into doing anything she didn't want to do. I think that's so important in any relationship. And, I mean, it really was this stark contrast to the way B handles her crush,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And it's like, if you had any doubts that she should have been with B.
Right, right. Yeah. Obviously, that was going to be a terrible choice. Yeah.
So it ends with Grant listening to her story.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think happens after that? Because I think they make it. And I very much want a sequel to this. So if okay. I could just, I want to loudly put that out into the universe that I want a sequel to this.
I would love to see them make it if Grant is really doing the work and, you know, being a huge trans ally, not just, I'm your boyfriend, and I love you, and I want to be with you.
Because the whole school knows now. So yeah. His choice is to be by her, if he's staying by
her side, he needs to be doing that emotional labor of, if some jerk punks are, you know, saying
jerk punks.
I'm elderly. but if like some jerk in the hallway is like
says a slur,
he's saying, you know, like he's standing up for her and he's like, that's ridiculous, that's transphobic, you need to apologize, you know.
Yeah, standing up for her without violence.
Let's not punch any more people. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, Grant hasn't.
No, but I mean, we've had a punch.
Right.
So let's have zero more punches. But like, you know, standing up for her, she has enough battles. She doesn't need to fight all of them. Like being an ally is doing that emotional labor where you can.
I did have another kind of tidbit where B had said that queer people in the South are addicted to the closet. So let's unpack this because we are in the South.
We happen to be, yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's a problematic statement because
there's a lot problematic with B.
There is a lot problematic with B, yes. Because I think there is a lot of that you can kind of surmise by the way that was phrased. I would disagree about anybody being addicted to the closet. Because if I remember correctly, the context of that statement was B was talking about the conservative people that are acting the most homophobic are frequently queer themselves, and so they're constantly talking about gay sex because they are in fact not straight, but because they can't admit that to themselves.
And that's the only way to talk about gay sex.
Yeah, because she made the point. She was like, she goes, how often do you be said to Amanda, mm-hmm. how often do you think about having sex with women? And Amanda's like, never. She's like, yeah, because you're straight. The people that are constantly talking about gay sex aren't straight. And that was like the context of that conversation. Right. But like, how is that being addicted to the closet? Because like, yes, in the specific situation where you're talking about somebody that is acting homophobic, has this own very strong internalized homophobia because they themselves are not straight. However they might identify if they could get to that point. Sure, that individual is addicted to being in the closet because they don't want to work through the internalized homophobia and be who they are. Sure. But I feel like the problem I have with that statement is the generalization of people in the South. And again, like you talk about B being problematic, her generalization of the experience of queer people in the South is the problem, right? Because there are lots of people who know that they're queer and want to be out, but it's not safe. And the fact that she's specifically saying that to a trans person who is trying so hard to be safe because she already came from somewhere where she could have died from a couple different times is really harmful, you know? So even if in a specific situation you could say, yeah, okay, somebody who is acting homophobic and doing harm to queer people who themselves is actually queer but can't admit it, sure, in that specific situation, I guess you could say that. I don't know that it accomplishes anything.
I think it's, I applied it more to like politicians because they're the ones making the anti-LGBTQ laws. Mm-hmm. And so they're likely the ones that are having all that internalized phobia.
Yeah.
And they're in their closets. They got this picture perfect family.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have to clear their search history all the time.
But here's the thing, like, we don't know how many are like that.
Yeah, I'm just saying. It's just an interesting comment because it's hard sometimes to be queer anywhere, but it can be a mm-hmm. little bit more challenging in the South.
Well, okay, so let's talk about that. One of the things that I thought was interesting, it's like you have the character of Anna, mm-hmm. Great name, by the way.
Great name.
Great name. But she literally shows up in a van with homophobic bumper stickers, like egregiously homophobic. One of them, what was it? Was like, I can't help being homophobic. I was born that way. And something I was like, no one is.
Yeah, no one's born that way.
No one is born that way. You're taught hate. But like, they specifically talk about her being Southern Baptist. And
which is what I was raised.
Oh, what I'm about to tell you is going to be...
No, go ahead. Bring it on.
A pill.
Oh, God. I got it.
Really bad, gross pill. Do you know when and how, like when and why, Baptist and Southern Baptist first...
Split. You're making a hand motion. Split. Yeah. When they Mosesed? No.
So, unfortunately...
Was it ever dancing?
Slavery.
Oh, I was going to say dancing. But yeah, slavery is worse than dancing.
Yeah, so during the Civil War, literally the Baptist... I found a really cool, I think it was New York Times? Yeah, New York Times article about it. But that it was a split over slavery.
Which one was against slavery?
Oh, I'm going to give you a wild guess.
Was it the Baptist?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I did later go to transfer. I don't know. Later,
you transferred?
We went to a Baptist church later on. Because, you know, we like dancing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of those things like when you start understanding like the history of, you know, whatever group you identify with that you go to, like church, whatever. It's important to kind of understand some of those differences because you want to find a home that mirrors your values, right? I just thought it was really interesting. Like, I don't think it's an accident or a coincidence is all
right.
I'm saying.
No, I feel like all the characters are very purposefully developed to make a great story.
Do you remember the altercation with Marcus in the 7th grade? So Marcus was this guy that... Well, in the story, they say Andrew, because that was before Amanda was out.
Pre-transition, right.
But anyway, Marcus had, I guess, stolen Andrew. I'm doing quotation marks. That just feels wrong. I know it was that way in the book, but I just want to say Amanda. We all know I'm talking about Amanda, but in the past. So Marcus had stolen her diary and was reading it. And it was so heartbreaking because he was like, he was calling her, you know, homophobic slurs. And literally he's reading it and it just starts talking about how much she likes him. And then like how nice he is.
And it's like, you're not nice now.
And it's like, and she just like, the author describes it so perfectly, like him realizing, well, she's actually just saying I'm a really nice person. And then, like, then just feels angry at himself for doing that.
Yeah,
like,
that was a really pivotal moment for, especially 7th graders. It's all a tough age, but that,
dude,
that age in particular.
It reminded me so much of, like, a really horrific moment in, I think it was 7th grade, where my best friend in the entire world just, like, threw a hateful note at me in gym class, in the locker room, which is like the worst place to be, about how she hated me and didn't want to be near me and didn't ever want to see me or talk to me again.
Were you currently using deodorant at the time? Because you talked about gym class.
Yes.
That's a fair question.
It's a fair question, but yeah.
Okay.
And it just, like, it's hard to be queer. It's hard to grow up. It's hard to do both. I'm curious, you know, I mean, do any of our listeners have any weird, earth-shattering middle school stories about, like, close friendships that just, like...
Dissolved.
Well,
out of nowhere.
Exploded.
Exploded, dissolved, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anything dissolves in middle school.
What you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you don't have to tell us what it is.
You can email us, too.
I feel like that's one of those ages where you first start... to develop romantic feelings and you know
learn what that feels like, not just, oh, I have a crush because I'm supposed to. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so rating. I give it 5 rainbows.
Well, of course, it has to be 5 rainbows. Can we give it 5 trans rainbows?
We can give it 5 trans rainbows.
Okay.
Highly recommend Meredith's second book, Birthday, another tearjerker. It's told from 2 best friends' point of view on they share the same birthday. And what happens between each year, and romantic feelings develop. Hint, hint. But it is phenomenal. I mean, it's just everything she touches is just phenomenal.
I want to share this parting thought before we do our closeout. In the author's note, I said I was going to talk about it.
A lot. Yeah, you did. You warned us.
I loved it. It's like my favorite author's note. Meredith kind of leaves us with, like, calling out, like, if you're struggling with stuff, like, reach out. There's like the Trevor Project. There's actually a hotline specifically for trans folks that are struggling with suicidal ideation or struggling. But she says, I promise life can be good. And
yeah,
I mean, it's so true. Life can be good. And it,
she's a testament to that.
It does get better.
People who are queer themselves writing queer stories is so impactful.
I love it.
And like I said at the intro, you know, this is one of the first books about transgender issues and a teen's life, transgender teen, written by a trans woman.
And that's, I mean, I think it makes a big difference.
Absolutely. All right. Our next book is Kings of Be More by R. Eric Thomas. That will be our July read.
I'm excited. I've never read this one.
I know, me neither.
Ooh, it's a double blind.
It recently won the Stonewall Book Award. So
it's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a good one. Well, they've all been good.
Yeah, no, that's true. I don't think we've had a book yet where I wasn't like, oh my gosh, it's amazing.
And we are being better about posting about queer books that we have read in the interim between recordings. So yes, we can suggest books for you to read outside of what we talk about.
Yeah, yeah. And we're open to, like, if there's, you know, a specific book that you're excited about, you shout it out in our Instagram, Facebook, or whatever.
Absolutely. Let us know.
Well, until next time,
we are all queer here.
Absolutely.